guests are Lucy Arnaz, Lucille Ball, Carol Burnett, Muhammad Ali's physician, Dr. Freddie Pacheco, and Bob Rosengarten and the orchestra. Ladies and gentlemen, Dick Cavett!
Thank you. Oh, this audience is really together. You will be together when the gum on your seats hardens up there in the balcony, actually. Sorry about that. See, I am sorry people that sit in the balcony. Some of them are quite high up there in the back, and it's... Oh, you know what I mean. We would appreciate it if you did not drop pebbles down on the people below to hear the echo. It's not that high up there. Anyway, it's nice to see you. See, if I seemed distracted last night during the monologue, I was. Partly because I was going to the fight, because I was excited about that, and partly because a guy kept yelling down in front and was talking to me, which I thought was sort of embarrassing. He isn't here tonight again, is he? Hi, Robert.
Richard.
Robert is our orchestra leader, as you know, and does the warm-up, which the audience at home never sees. One of the advantages of being at home, actually. Is it fun, the warm-up? I don't know what you do out here. Sometimes I'm going to come out and... Oh, one person.
How was the audience tonight?
How was the audience tonight?
When you came out.
They seemed very good. You must have done something wonderful to them. Let's move on. Robert has an equivalency diploma from Sesame Street, and he's one of our top boys here. Say, oh, by the way, I must apologize to the Millard Fillmore Society. They called yesterday. They were very upset, the Millard Fillmore Society. I did not mention that it was the anniversary of Millard Fillmore, the former president, died 93 years ago. He died in Buffalo, as so many have, and is well known as being our 8th or 13th or 11th president, and I wanted to mention that for them. I did go to the fight last night. Gee, that was exciting. Wow, I've never had anything like that happen. I went with my wife, who does not like to go out in public with me. No, it's because of the, you know, the inevitable, ooh, it's you, at a celebrity, you know, and I just can't help it. When I see a celebrity, I go, ooh, it's you, and it's just, can't do it. But I don't go to many sports events, partly because it is embarrassing to be glared at for not standing during the national anthem. When you are standing. I can't get over that. Say, the latest fashions have caught on at that fight. You should have seen the clothes. And both guys wearing hot pants, can you imagine? Was it $2.5 million that they each got? Is that right? $2.5 million each. Someone broke that down to 2.5, yeah. Someone broke that down to $926 a second. Which is still sort of hard to grasp. To give you an idea how much that is, Fraser took home a cab after the show. took a cab home would have been better wording, but what does it matter? We're way ahead. And then the astronauts were in town yesterday. They were at the fight last night. It's funny how the different papers report. The news referred to the astronauts as our gutsy fly guys. Did you see that? But the New York Times said lunar explorers fated. And the Village Voice said three who spaced out with a single capsule. That's how they... I don't know what's becoming of things. I really don't know what's becoming of the world. It's reported in today's Post that in Washington, D.C., a homosexual candidate for Congress is campaigning by kissing people. That's in today's papers. I'm not making that. He will make an exception, of course. If it's a baby, he shakes hands with it. But, don't we live in an enlightened age? Will there ever be a nymphomaniac candidate? And if there is, I don't want to go on with this joke. Listen, we must get moving. We have a terrific show for you tonight. And, I forgot to do the political news. This will only take a second. There are rumors at any moment that Tricia Nixon's engagement might be, in the late papers, might be announced. Which means there'll be a, if then should we engage, and then there may be a big White House wedding, and then there may be the patter of little feet in the White House. That has nothing to do with her. David Eisenhower is taking tap dancing lessons. I thought I'd let you laugh, then I laugh, then I get double the amount of laughter. Listen, we have a terrific show tonight. How do I know? I haven't seen it. But it should be. It's got it. I'll guarantee. Lucille Ball is here, and Carol Burnett, and Muhammad Ali's doctor is here. And Lucy Arnaz, familiar name. We'll be right back with all that. Stay with us. We'll be back. Oh, before we go on, I don't know how long it's going to take me to get over the fight last night. It was such an exciting thing, and I was exhausted when it was over from watching it there. And certainly, I assume, was Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier also. But I can find out about one of them right now and how he felt and how badly he was hurt from his doctor, his personal physician for the past 10 years, Dr. Ferdy Pacheco. We welcome him, please. Band having its little joke there.
Sense of humor.
Well, I guess everybody wants to know is there still any chance that he was hurt as much as they thought? Because the word went around where I was that his jaw was broken. It started going around the garden. I don't know where that came from. And then even later, people said, yeah, it's confirmed. He does have a broken jaw, and he may never fight again because of that. No.
Well, I could see where people would feel that his jaw was broken. The rumor started by just simply looking at him. One side of his jaw was twice the other side, ruling out mumps rather immediately. You could come up with a diagnosis that he had a broken jaw. Getting down to the confirming it, that, as you know, in your business or my business or in the boxing business, rumors fly and they're confirmed by all sorts of people. We were fortunate enough to be able to whisk him to a New York hospital where Flower Fifth, where we took x-rays, and it was confirmed that he did not have a fracture of the jaw or of the cheekbone, but just a collection of blood as a result of that left hook that dropped him. So fortunately, he had no serious injury, and the injury that he has is so minor that it probably will disappear in another 5 or 6 days.
That's definite.
That's absolutely
correct. I wonder if people are anxious, in some sense, or afraid to be hurt, because the word just spread. People said, I heard it, I got it direct from the doctor.
I think it heightens the drama of a naturally dramatic contest. It's probably nothing more dramatic than a heavyweight championship fight between two equally matched fighters. And certainly this fight was the best I've been involved in about 12 years of being in fighting. And I don't see that the public would want to diminish it by not spreading these gory rumors. Mm-hmm. So I also heard that Joe Frazier's jaw was broken. And by the end of the evening, I heard Count Basie and Buddy Rich's jaw was broken. Everybody's jaw was broken.
Yeah. They got the names wrong, but they... Well, how do you watch a fight?
Nervously.
I'll bet you do, yeah.
Anxiously. I usually have some place to go after the fight, and I'm always praying that my fighter doesn't get hurt so I can go. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this blew the whole thing yesterday, and we spent the whole night in the hospital back and forth.
Would it have been good for him to stay in the hospital?
No. It would be a good medical practice, but for the same reason that you pointed out a moment ago, the confirming of rumors and the starting of rumors, it's sort of disastrous to put a fighter in the hospital overnight. All of a sudden, vicious connotations begin, and people say, mm-hmm. Well, Joe Frazier put this guy in the hospital for a day, and... although it's great for the publicity flex to start to churn up a rematch, it's not good for the fighter, and I don't think that was a true reflection of what happened to him. He got hit by one punch very hard and blew a little blood vessel, which exuded this blood into the space of his jaw, and at the angle of the jaw, and that was all that happened to him. He's very tired.
I never saw him look swollen after a fight before. And
he's never been hit like Joe Frazier hit him after the fight.
Yeah.
Joe Frazier's an excellent fighter, and he did what no one else has been able to do, get to Muhammad Ali, and you have to admire the man. He's a super fighter in my book.
Does Muhammad feel that he lost? Definitely that he lost. I mean, I'm sure he's seen the paper and all, but does he have any sense of dispute about it?
No, there's no dispute in his mind.
Because a couple of columnists, you know, one Larry Merchant in the Post feels that he didn't lose on decision, that he shouldn't have, and so presumably if he'd been one of the scorers, Muhammad would have won with him.
I read Larry's column. He's an excellent boxing writer, and I agree it was very close. Going into the last round, a gentleman came with me today, an international boxing expert, Bud Schulberg, and I were both sitting. He was the extra man in our corner, dressed up the place with a tuxedo and his white hair. And he decided that going into the last round, it was even, except whoever took the last round. And as both of us were nodding to each other, whoever takes this round wins. Yeah. Clay was dropped on his back, and that kind of killed that. He lost the fight. I felt he lost the last round, he lost the fight, but it was very close.
Yeah, I swear the men around me who go to the fight all the time, they did not know who had won until the decision was announced. It was not as clear-cut as some people claim they saw it there in the...
Their judgment is tempered quite a bit and obfuscated by the fact that they have wagered some sums of money on one side or the other.
Yeah.
So depending on who you bet on is who you think. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's not betting on fights anymore.
Do you control his...
Or less either.
Do you control Clay's diet? I call him alternately Ollie and Clay. It's hard to remember.
It's confusing me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you care what he eats? Do you worry about that?
I don't care what he eats, but he cares what he eats. He is part of his religion, and the Muslim religion has dietary laws.
Yeah.
And fortunately for a fighter, it segues into the fighter's needs as a fighter. Mm-hmm. So he gets a lot of meat, he gets a lot of fresh vegetables, and he gets it cooked in prescribed dietary fashion that they set forth in their laws.
Yeah. What does he eat the day of the fight? A steak?
The day of the fight, most fighters around about 2 or 3 o'clock before a fight will eat a big steak, an enormous a bowl of lettuce and any kind of fresh vegetable they can get at the time. And that's it. They eat nothing further until the fight, which is about 10:30 at night.
Well, I did just want to get you here to confirm the rumor that his jaw is not broken, because that's still going around. I mean, people seem very fond of the idea for some reason. And
well, I'm glad to dispel that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to have to leave. I have to go on one of your greatest friends' programs, Howard Cosell, and air his warm message to the whole nation.
Cosell.
A name to conjure.
Yes, certainly is. Please conjure with it for me and tell him hello. Thank you for being here, Doctor.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Now it's time for a timely message for Dial, time release antiperspirant. Dial, we'll be right back. My next guest had an extraordinary childhood, as she would have to have had. She shows every sign also of having a terrific career. She plays Lucille Ball's daughter on a television show called Here's Lucy, as you know, and it's one of those incredible show business coincidences. That she should play her daughter because she is her daughter. Isn't that amazing? Will you welcome, please, Lucy Arnaz. You went right for the chair.
Ooh. I knew where I was supposed to go. I followed directions very well.
I never saw anyone get into the chair so quickly.
Oh.
That's very nice. Were you making it easy for me?
I didn't want to stand next to you too long.
Going back to those old jokes I used to do when I pretended that my height was less than average.
That's right.
Oh,
you don't
yes.
pretend that anymore.
I won't.
It's no fun.
Because everyone knows. Are you a big kid for your age? I mean, the fact that you're 6'3", does that stand in your way?
You see, we can kibitz like this forever. I'm not now, but I sure was for an awful long time. It's pretty normal to be 5'8 and 3/4 at 19, but when you're 5'7 at 14...
Oh, was that... And taller than the boys in the class,
probably,
too.
That's the only problem that was really bad, was that the boys were all very short at that time.
So when they asked for something to be reached down from a shelf, they let you do it instead of the guys who play football.
But when they ask you to lead when you're dancing, it sort of gets to you.
You think you're warped by this? You seem healthy, normal?
No, because now you get to wear all the good clothes. You know, tall people can wear really, like, a lot of different types of things.
And you didn't develop a slump the way a lot of tall girls do, trying to...
No, I sit very tall and straight. Yeah.
That's good. I hate to see a girl, you know, slump over because she thinks she's too tall.
Well,
unless,
no,
of course,
I like
she
it
is
now.
Too tall.
I really do. I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
What kind of schooling did you have?
A lot of different
schooling. We bounced around in school the way
not
a lot of showbiz
much,
kids are?
Not just a couple of times, because we had to switch schools the first time because my mother came here to New York to do Wildcat. Mm-hmm. And then when we went back, you know, like, I didn't want to go back to those same kids because I didn't know them too well, so it's just as well we went to a brand new school, a Beverly Hills Catholic school. Doesn't that sound terrific? Oh, God, is that square. But it was the worst.
Really?
It was terrible. It really was, I must say. It was probably one of the worst times of my life. Even though, I mean, I learned a lot, but that school, I hope it's not there anymore.
What was so rough about it? Was it
Well, you see, there's something about not to offend any nuns in, that are watching.
Mm-hmm.
I love nuns. I really do. I had some really best friends in high school that were nuns, you know, that taught me. But high school nuns are different than grammar school nuns, Dick.
Which nuns do you prefer, if you have
the
your
high
choice?
The high school nuns.
I see, the high school.
They're people, you see. And the grammar school nuns, I think they recruit from the army. Am I
That's
right?
Yes.
They do the old bit, you know, with the ear. They drag you up to the thing, and they slap you around and call you dirty names. Oh, I want to tell you, I learned some terrific language.
I'm having my eyes opened here. I had no idea.
You never knew that,
No,
right?
I always thought that I went to the regular kind of school. And not...
Now, I'm sorry I mentioned the name of the school, but I really don't care.
I like a kid who's...
I really... You bring out the openness
Yeah,
in me,
I certainly
Dick.
Do.
Oh, mercy.
Who else would you like to get? Did you know when you were growing up that you were having a very unusual childhood, that somewhere out in Nebraska was a little boy like me growing up in just a regular street and with a dog and a little, you know, baseball here and there and going to the movies, but that you were living in the glamorous, most marvelous part of the world, Hollywood, Beverly Hills.
Only on the outside. On the inside, I was had a little dog, and I went to school and to the movies, and just like everybody else.
Do you mean that there's a little Nebraska in you?
There's a little bit of Nebraska in everybody, in me.
But it didn't seem extraordinary. You didn't realize that other kids' parents are not famous and photographed, or did you think that every kid's parents get stopped for autographs?
Other kids' parents, you know, who were kids of famous stars, they had parents that were stars. My parents weren't stars.
Your
I don't understand why people were yelling at my, you know, that was my mother, my father, so daddy and mommy.
And when someone would stop and go, oh, Lucy, or something like that,
I'd turn around and say, what? Yeah. They weren't talking to me. I couldn't understand that.
But the fact that stars came to your home for dinner and things, that must have dazzled you a little
bit. Well, when I grew up, when I was about 13, you know, that's the age when you scream and go, oh, it's you, I heard you say that. But that, you know, that's when I really went crazy. And all of a sudden, you know, like, I wanted them to introduce me to everybody. And I never got to meet Paul Newman or Marlon Brando or anybody.
Who'd you get to meet?
Mary Wicks and Wally Cox.
Well, they went to the same school you did, probably.
Yes, that's why.
But I couldn't imagine what that would be like. I still can't. So the idea that my parents could, for example, know Milton Berle or something like that.
Well, you get kind of used to it. You know, I have nothing to compare it with, see? It's like, if I was the president's daughter, well, then I could say what it's like being the president's daughter because you're not always the president's daughter. But I don't know, it's...
But you've always lived that life, so do you.
I've always lived it, and everybody knows. I wish I was trying last night to think of an answer to give you when you asked me what it was like to be Lucille Ball's daughter, because I'm asked that all the time, and I never have an answer, and so I don't have a funny answer. The only thing I could think is imagine what it would feel like if I wasn't her daughter.
Yeah.
Think about it, folks. You'll get it about an hour from now.
Beyond a certain age, one doesn't ask a lady her age, but certainly you're nowhere near that age. And so
19
perhaps one. Oh, I hadn't finished the 19.
Yeah.
Gee, I have a feeling when I was 19 I was half your age. I don't know what it is. It's just, I can't quite explain that. When you were a kid, when you were a little kid, maybe this is a new question for you. Do kids whose parents are performers play theater or dress up or do they not?
Yeah, all the time. You should have seen the little theater I had. You would have loved it.
We had a little theater?
It was such fun. We had a garage that my mother wasn't using because this house had two garages and we only used one, right? I mean, how many garages can you use?
Yeah.
And I asked her if we could turn it into a theater. Just a little basic Abbey Rent chairs and things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she had the guy come over from the studio. And Bill, I guess this was the only thing I could say was different from being a regular kid. Because we wanted to put on plays. And so she built a stage and little dressing rooms on each side, which meant really just a chair and a table and a curtain in front of it. And little microphone system with one speaker. And we had a little box office she put out front. And we sold nickel tickets. And we tried, you know, to put on a lot of plays, but going to school and everything. But we did. We put on Bye Bye Birdie. And I played Anne Margaret. And I wore my hair parted way over here so that when I put it over there, it hung in my eyes.
Yeah?
I was 11 at the time.
Do you know Anne
Margaret?
You
couldn't imagine how funny that was.
Your Catholic childhood certainly subdued you. It's amazing. Aunt Margaret was here one night, and I don't think she... I think she left mad at me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She's a nice lady. I can't
I thought
that.
So, but... Well, there was a film clip they showed with a movie with her in it, and Joe Namath and her husband, and they were all sitting here. And I thought it would be funny at the end of the film clip. It was up there on the monitor, and then when it ended, they cut back to me, and I said, is a lot of money writing on this picture?
Oh, you know, just I
to do a sort of funny negative reaction.
Yeah.
And she got a little angry, and she said, I've never seen you in a movie. And I said, what a coincidence. And I don't know what got into me, you know? Sometimes... Well, my...
I knew there was something I liked about you, Dickens.
I'm glad we finally found it. We will return after this message for our local station. Let's start.
Pay her $10 or something.
We'll see how that works out. What? Oh, there's the country looking at us. My next guest stars in her own hit CBS television series. It's called, coincidentally, The Carol Burnett Show. She will be doing Plaza Suite in May in Los Angeles. People can actually see her in person that way. And at a time when the word sex symbol is overworked, it's a pleasure to introduce a woman to whom it really applies, the beautiful, luscious Carol Burnett.
It's so nice to meet you.
I was going to say the same.
You little Dickens.
Dickens, indeed. You know, we have never met.
No, we haven't.
And yet we have passed each other.
Ships that pass in the night.
That's right.
We have to stop meeting like this, Dick.
Well, I'll tell you what. I saw you in front of a theater one time. I don't know, just standing there.
In New York?
In New York. 5 years ago.
I was probably looking for a guy.
Well, that's funny, because I went past several times.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember a guy going by several times.
Was that you?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, you had that sort of low whistle on you.
Yeah.
I heard a very peculiar thing about you, and I just like to check these things, because they often turn out not to be right when I check them on the air, and that was that as a kid, you pretended to be twins. Is there anything to this, or is this...
Yeah.
How do you do that? That seems like a great idea.
Well, you were talking about play acting and everything, doing plays. And I grew up in Hollywood. I was born in Texas, but we grew up in Hollywood. And there were, a passel of kids in the neighborhood. And we used to play act, but we would go see a movie and then we'd come home and play it and pretend it. Yeah. My grandmother used to make capes for me and my girlfriend out of pillowcases and dye them black. And we'd put on masks and go down and hang around the Bank of America looking for robbers, you know. But there was a boy, Asher Wachowski, who lived in our building, and I was about 9 or 10, I guess it was. Mm-hmm. And Asher used to sit in the lobby and read comic books all the time, and he wore glasses. And I lived in the apartment that was right off the lobby, so I thought, well, I'm gonna really fix Asher today. So I walked out and I said, Asher, I'm expecting my twin sister from Canada. Her name is Karen, and she'll be coming in shortly, so would you direct her to the apartment? I'm going to the store. And he said, oh yeah, okay, fine. So I left. Then I ran around the building and crawled into our window, changed clothes, got a suitcase, crawled out the window, ran back out and walked in. I said, hello, my name is Karen. Could you tell me where Carol Burnett lives? And he says, geez, right in there. And I knocked on the door. My grandmother said, come in. And I said, hello. And I made all sorts of noises in the door. Then I changed clothes again as Carol, ran back out. And I said, has Karen come in? And he said, yes, she just went. Well, this went on for about 6 days. I was exhausted. But I think I fooled him, unless he was putting me on to see how long I could keep it up.
Do you mean until this moment, Asher doesn't know that was a put on?
Actually, I'm triplets.
Yes, I'm not me tonight. I want you to know that.
Well, I don't know. You could convince me of anything. You're one of those people who can... who can do anything, you can convince me. Were you the funny kid in your neighborhood, though, Jen?
No, I was very, well, in the neighborhood, yeah, I guess so, because we, as I said, we used to go see movies, you know, at the Hitching Post Theater on Hollywood Boulevard and stay and see 14 Westerns and then all the Nyoka Queen of the Jungle serials and Flash Gordon and come home and do those. But in school, I was pretty quiet, and I was a good student, and so a lot of the kids that I grew up with and everything were kind of shocked when I went into show business. I was shocked, too. I never expected to.
You didn't?
No.
Did you have any goal that you thought of you were getting to? Did you really think of yourself as a...
I wanted to be an astronaut. But that was before that happened. I love Flash Gordon
really...
and all that, you know.
Yeah.
And then I thought I'd be a journalist. I wanted to be Brenda Starr and fall in love with a man with a patch over his eye. You know, and have stars in my eyes and a real pretty apartment, you know, and natural red hair.
Maybe during this evening with you and Lucille Ball, we can find out how people who have a daughter will know if that daughter is going to be a comedian or not. Is there any sign of it in your own daughters?
Well, I don't know. I don't know yet. The baby is two. She's potty trained, if that's funny, I don't know. They all kind of play act. The middle one, last week, we're doing some work in the house, she's four, told the plumber that, she said, hello, I'm Jody, and my mother is Juliet Prowse, and I'm married to Ray Charles.
Well, it looks like she has a start there.
Well, I thought, well, right on, baby. You know, if she thinks I'm Juliet Prowse, well, maybe she needs glasses. And the older one is interested, but I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Hard
She's
to tell
seven, yeah.
What other odd things did you do as a kid, though, that might have indicated you were heading for show business?
Just that. I'd come home and play Nyoka, you know.
Yeah.
You remember...
Queen of the Jungle? I never played
Frances
her.
Frances Gifford?
I preferred to play Jack Armstrong as a kid.
I did him too.
We did?
Oh, yeah. And Tarzan and Jane. I have a very pretty cousin, and we were the same age, and she's a beautiful blind girl. And we would play Tarzan and Jane and guess who? And Nelson and Jeanette, and I'd be Nelson, and we'd just play act the whole thing, you know. And we had a hill we used to go up and play jungle on, and then we would mark it off where the quicksand was, and we'd have ropes, and then we'd swing over, and if you touched where that was marked off, you'd go down in the quicksand, you died for that afternoon, you know.
That sounds good. I wish I'd known you as a kid.
I had a groovy childhood.
Yeah. You sound more fun than my little friends.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe there's still time for us to put up a rope and some quicksand.
What are you doing later?
Well, Lucy said she had a little theater. Did you get into your mother's clothing and dress up in costumes and...
No, we didn't have that.
I read that you got into a closet and acted or something. What was this in an interview or that
was last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm a closet tap dancer.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, as a kid, I can't move. I'm such a klutz. And, Our choreographer, Ernie Flatt, is a genius. And he, whenever it's time for me to do a step, somehow, mysteriously, I'm lifted by the board dancers, and then I land. You know? Looks terrific. So when I was a kid, I wanted to dance. I really did. But I was this tall when I was 11. And, so I used to think I could dance, and I'd see a Fred Astaire movie or something, and I'd come home, and then we only had one room, and I'd start to tap, and then my grandmother, my mother, or my kid sister would come in, so I'd go in the closet and tap.
What age were you when you
42.
Came out of the closet? Well, let me check a fact with you, too. Is it true that you had a sort of fairy godfather who's...
Yes.
Not in the modern sense, but who got you into show business, you know what I mean? Yeah. No, they always refer to this benefactor of yours, and it's some kind of mysterious about it.
Well, it's not a very humorous story, but it's kind of nice. It's marvelous, actually. I was working as a box office cashier in Hollywood on weekends and going to UCLA, and I performed a scene from Annie Get Your Gun at a party one night in San Diego for class, and a gentleman came up with his wife, and he said, what do you want to do, you know, when you get out of school? And I said, I want to go to New York. and become, you know, go into musical comedy. And he said, well, why don't you go now? And, you know, on 75 cents an hour, there was no way. And he said, no, I'll give you the money. And I thought, well, you know, what is this? And he said, no, I'm serious. You call me, I'll be out of town in a week, and I'll give you the money to go to New York. So I called him from school a week later, and he said, yeah, I'm in it. So I drove down to San Diego, and he's a wealthy millionaire, if that's redundant. And yeah, and he said, well, what do you really want to go into show business? I said, yes, I'm very sincere about it. He said, all right. And he wrote out a check for $1,000. I'd never seen that many zeros in my life. Mm-hmm. And he said, now, there are three stipulations. A, obviously, you must never reveal my name, because everybody in the world would be, you know, asking for money. Yeah. It's a loan. You must pay it back in 5 years.
He wanted you to be
with no interest, you know, but I want you to pay it back to feel that you are responsible for this, and you must go to New York, as you promised. And if you do make it, if you are successful in your chosen field, you must promise to help others out in show business. And
that's a true story.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
And so I came here and I moved into the rehearsal club, and mm-hmm. I got my teeth fixed, so I didn't spend a hell of a lot on that. And I paid him back 5 years to the day, and I started a scholarship at a college in Boston for kids interested in the theater. And I saw him just last year for the first time. This was in 1952.
How'd he look?
He looks great. And we had lunch with him and his wife, and
for some reason, I picture him as a very old man.
No, he was 50 or 49 or 50 at the time, and evidently he'd helped other people out too, not just in show business, but he'd stake somebody maybe to a gas station or a restaurant or something like that if he felt they were sincere.
So he's almost like that guy on
the millionaire.
I was just going to say.
He's the thousandaire.
The thousandaire. That is many zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gee, did you ever get the old, you said you were a little worried about him at first, because we all know that there are dirty old men. Did you ever get chased around the office or the casting couch or whatever those things are that you supposedly have in show business?
No.
I'm too naive to know about those things. Not by him, of course, but by anyone.
No, Dick.
Never did?
No.
Well,
you want to go on to another question now?
No, I find that very odd. I mean, almost every lady.
Well, look, you walk by me on the street. No, you know, you never saw.
That's true. That is strange, though. I mean, most everybody in show business is. Well, if you never have, Carol, I guess.
I never got past the secretaries. You know, there was no way. And boy, if a secretary chased me around the desk, I'd be worried.
Yeah. But I think of you as very, I'm being completely honest now, terribly attractive.
Oh, my God.
True. Oh, I really do.
Would you like me to leave you two alone for a while?
I think of Lucy Arnaz as short, too, so you see that. I give with one hand. Here's some advice on how to get rid of unpleasant household odors. I'm sorry. Right now. We'll be right back. My next guest took over a television studio in a year in which it lost over $600,000, as I read it. And I wrote it down, and $65,000. And 6 years later, she sold it for $17 million, which is not bad for a girl who was fired by Ziegfeld. But that's probably not the most interesting thing about her. The most interesting about her is that she's one of the great comic actresses, I think, that this country has produced. We welcome, please, a sort of American institution. I think it's safe to say, Lucille Ball. Why did you suddenly change your posture there?
I saw you were looking.
Oh. It's a relief. No one on tonight's show has worn hot pants. Last night, Carol
yes,
Channing
you were,
and Marlo
you were
Thomas.
Up to here in hot pants, weren't you?
I was. They had more skin showing than I have, I think, last night. It was too much.
Well, I have hot pants, but I'm saving them.
You did?
You've been gone 2 weeks.
Talk that way in front of your daughter.
Yes.
I called you an American institution, which sounds a bit...
You did?
...much when you're in the introduction, yeah. But that's safe to say, I think. There's no... You're sort of a landmark, like...
How old do you have to be an institution?
Well, there's some new institutions. There's some...
I don't mind. I really like it.
You were fired by Ziegfeld. Can you remember that?
Indeed,
can you remember
I can.
The moment?
Yes, I can. Yes.
I never heard you tell that.
No, I've never told it.
Next question is, am I about to hear you tell it?
Well, yes. It's hard to believe. But when I came to this town, all I knew about was trying to get into vaudeville. Mm-hmm. And I never got near, even an agent. I never got inside a building, an office, anything that had anything to do with vaudeville. But finally, some girls that I met that were starving along with me were going to a call at the Ziegfeld Theater.
Casting call?
Yes, for a third road show of Rio Rita. It's many, many years ago. And I made it. I made the call. I was chosen. One of I don't know how many. I've forgotten. And I kept that job for 5 days. That was the longest I'd ever kept any job. That was just in rehearsal, of course. Yeah. And at the end of 5 days, they just very, you know, culled us out like that. That's it. Goodbye.
Not even sweet about it.
Well, they didn't even know our names. Mm-hmm. So I was so terrified because I'd already written home and told everyone that I was a Ziegfeld girl. I didn't say that I was just going on the road and something, but yeah. It sounded great in Jamestown, New York. And I was out on the street, literally. Even the theater's gone now. But I was right out there on that street, whatever it was, where the Ziegfeld Theater was, and I was crying. And I just wouldn't leave the area, wouldn't leave the premises. Everybody else had gone home, but I just stood there crying. And a man came out. His name, I think, was Henry Sharp. I'm not sure. He's dead now. But he was a right-hand man to Mr. Ziegfeld. And he said, "What's the matter?" And I told him. And I was sobbing. And he said, "Well, it's ridiculous to stand there and cry. There are other jobs." He didn't know that I had never been anywhere near a job before that. And he said, "The thing for you to do is just go on about your life, find another job." Well, sounded so sad. And he walked away, and I followed him for about 2 blocks like an idiot, and sobbing and being a... You've never heard this either, Lucy. And I just cried so. And he finally said, will you go away? Stop following me. You get me arrested. So I stopped, and I turned the other way, and I went toward Fifth Avenue. And I remember saying, "I've got to kill myself. I've got to die. I can't tell anybody at home what's happened to me." So I tried to figure how I'd do it.
You were serious?
Oh, yes.
I was depressed.
Not quite serious enough to do it, but yeah. I thought I was. I was so depressed. Well, I was only 16. Yeah. And I walked toward Fifth Avenue, and a big limousine passed. Huge limousine. I hadn't seen anything that big in my life. And I thought, if you're going to get hit by a big one. In case you don't die, you know? Uh-huh. So I tried to throw myself in front of the limousine. Instead of that, it just stopped. So I picked myself up, and I went on back to my little room. That was it. That was the end of my suicide attempt.
And if it hadn't...
It's true.
If that car had been going faster, I would be talking to an empty chair.
Two empty chairs.
Yeah.
Well, it's such an interesting story that Lucille Ball might have. Were you Lucille Ball then?
You don't think I'd choose that name?
Well, I.
After that, I changed my name. I changed my name to Diane Belmont.
Oh.
I was driving in Long Island, and I saw the Belmont Racetrack, and I loved the name Diane.
Yeah.
Although all my life, when I was play acting, I was Madeline from The Light of the Western Stars. In the Zane Grey novel, you know, mm-hmm. I was always Madeline.
You like
and
Madeline.
I rode a broomstick around the house.
I was going to ask you if the name Diane Belmont rang a bell, because I had
uncovered
that.
It rings
Diane.
A bell, all right. It's just a name I picked, but mm-hmm. people to this day think my name was Diane Belmont, and I took Lucille Ball.
Did you run away from home, or have I got it wrong? There are various versions of...
Well, there are various versions because until Lucy was a certain age, I didn't want her to know it.
What?
I want to hear this.
Well,
is she
I didn't really run away. Yeah, yeah, she's old enough now to hear anything, and she has. I didn't really run away. The first time I went away, I was allowed to go away and stay with friends of the family here in New York City. They lived on Dyckman Street, and I went to the John Murray Anderson Robert Milton Dramatic School. And perhaps you might have read that John Murray Anderson, who is now deceased, I think, wrote and doesn't know me, and neither does Robert Milton. They don't remember. Betty Davis was the star pupil there at the time. And they wrote a letter to my mother and said she was wasting her money.
You or Betty Davis?
Me.
That you were wasting your money.
Yeah, my mother was wasting her money.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that ended my...
You read what a good listener I am.
Yes, yes. No, that ended my dramatic school training. So I went back to school in Jamestown. And I stayed there for another semester or two. Mm-hmm. And then again, I went away to New York, always with permission. Yeah. Once I ran away without permission. And I got about as far as three blocks, and there was my mother with a lunch and an umbrella. She knew I was going. She was watching the whole thing and just said, here you are. You might need these.
It sounds just like Dee Dee. Exactly.
Yeah. And then when I finally started going away, this all happened within a period of 2-3 years, but I went away many times. It's only 500 miles to New York from Jamestown. Mm-hmm. And I just cost my mother a fortune coming back because I died of homesickness. Were you ever really homesick?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was so ill. You can't... Have you ever been homesick?
Yeah, I have.
But I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I was violently ill, ran a fever. Mm-hmm. And I would call my mother, and she'd send the money, and I'd go home on the Erie.
And yet there was this drive to get back to New York and get into show business.
I always wanted to get into show business. I never even got close to it. Not even close to it. I never appeared in anything except back in Jamestown.
How do you explain that? Because that implies...
I didn't know where to go to get in. I didn't have any connections. I didn't know anyone in show business. I didn't even know how to look it up in the paper, I guess. I don't know. Finally, I got so hungry, I decided to become a model so I could eat. And I became a good model.
But models aren't supposed to eat.
That's true.
Never did do that right.
But I was so thin and so tall, it didn't matter. I didn't eat too much.
World is certainly...
I found out how to go to, what was that place called? Where they had donuts and... Not the automat. Needix.
Needix, yeah.
I found out how to go to Needix and slip into a stool, grab the nickel tip and grab the half a donut someone left and put the nickel down again and say, may I have a cup of coffee?
I saw you do that about a month ago. I couldn't believe my eyes.
I incorporated it in the show. I don't know if you saw it, but I did. I incorporated it in the show.
Yeah.
That and how to confiscate leftover food when you were taken out to dinner at night.
Mm-hmm. When you went through all that, then it must have really, as you were going along and finally beginning to get into the business and beginning to move, when you run into the people who make it hard for you on the way up, you must really learn to hate them, don't you?
I never ran into anyone who really tried to make it hard for me. Because, and I'll tell you why I say that. If anyone was trying to make it hard for me, I wasn't aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so grateful to be any part of the business that I was unaware of anything else. I was a part of it. I didn't care what I did. They never had to ask me twice to do anything.
And has that lasted this long, or is it now just a business to you in a sense?
No,
feel
it still lasts. Love being a part of it. I'm getting an award Thursday night that is probably the biggest thrill that anyone could have. You can get a lot of awards in this business, but some of them are very, very special because they're not doled out, you know, too generously. But to be recognized as someone who has really contributed, that's important to me.
Lucy's the only woman
to ever get this award. That's why we're back here.
Yeah, you're presenting it, or you're...
No, I'm not presenting. I'm at the banquet
and
in
program,
the show, on
I've
the program.
The thing. Yeah,
but
yeah.
She's the only woman to ever receive this.
To be a... I think the biggest thrill, I don't know, Carol, if this has happened to you, I think the biggest thrill I ever had was many years ago, and I read in a script, or in a column, I'm not sure which, it said, it was in a script, it said, Lucille Ball type. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Like,
And you realize you've become a type,
yeah,
that you're...
That was one of the biggest, I said, oh, I didn't care that I didn't get the part.
Yeah.
But at least I was something, it was identified with, you know.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to be typed.
In that sense.
Well, in that sense, and also as I am in television. Mm-hmm. I had made many pictures for 15 years, and each part was different. You never really are recognized for any particular type of person, any one personality. Mm-hmm. And I love television for that reason, because I picked my own type of person I wanted to be, and I was it.
Yeah.
And I stayed that way.
Yeah.
I like that.
Do you have a...
Thank you.
Do either of you have a desire to... Does either of you, or all three of you? What word means all three of you? Do any of you?
Use all.
I'm new to your language. Use all, yeah.
Use all.
To do serious stuff, I don't know. I don't see why comedians should.
That
always implies that you're not really doing anything good until you do serious stuff. And,
I've never had that. Have you?
No. My mother has done some fantastic serious things, though. Some movies have made me cry. Mm-hmm. They've been so very dramatic. Did you ever see Big Street?
Big Street.
With Henry Fonda, when she played that lady that was crippled with the little dog and...
I didn't see it.
Yeah, he pushed her all the way to Miami
in
just walking.
Oh!
He did?
It was terrible.
You'll watch that and like it.
She was so mean.
It's been rerun for 20 years on the tube.
And I cry every time.
I meant like now would it be pointless for you to do Chekhov or...
It would be pointless for me to do Chekhov at any time.
Yeah.
I'm just not interested in it. I enjoy watching it.
Yeah.
But I have no desire to do it.
There always is that kind of snobism about comedy, that as soon as a comedian does something serious, they say, gee, she can really act, as if comedy were that easy. There's a story about Shaw was directing some famous tragic actor in his first comedy, and the guy was sort of fooling around, and it made Shaw mad. And he said, tragedy, whatever what you're doing is all very well for tragedy, but comedy is serious business.
That's right.
It's kind of nice, isn't it?
Yes, and it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. I get all the seriousness that I can take, and I know Carol does.
Yeah.
Carol's imitations, Carol's takeoffs on what she has been doing in the last couple of years are fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And that's true.
Well, our local stations have a message, and we will return. Turn. I'm talking with Lucy Arnaz, Carol Burnett, and Lucille Ball. And we're talking about something earlier that leads me to this. I often wonder if women who are big stars, as you are, if they ever worry about, if my kids go berserk or something like that, it'll be because I'm a star and an egocentric person. People always think stars are that, you know. And if they worry about that always, how guilty they'd feel. And do you know what I'm saying? Does this ever...
No, Dick.
And nobody... You know what I'm saying? Does a lady star ever always have to think, gee, I wonder if I had to give it up for my family? And
any woman who works has the same feeling of guilt that perhaps they should be with their family more.
Yeah.
When we first started television, I was 6 months pregnant with Lucy. And so our television life started with Lucy's life. And certainly we made ourselves more time with our first child, who came rather late in life. And I had waited a long time and I wasn't about to. I think we spent more time with Lucy and with Desi than most people have to spend with their children, because we planned it that way. Carol plans her life that way now, too, and she has 11.
Well, I don't have them all myself.
Well...
one of
you're
the
a fantastic
young ladies
mother.
Are married now. She's mm-hmm. backstage and
fantastic
have five
mother.
Kids with us all yeah. the time.
You always keep five with you at any given time.
Any given but... moment. I don't know who uh-huh. they are, but they're with us. No, but I have the hours on our show are sensational. I'm home more than I am at work, really.
You do a weekly television show and you
yes.
can find time to go home?
I don't have to be at work any day. Well, taping day, I have to be there at 11 in the morning, but that's the earliest. Then I usually report in around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, get mm-hmm. there earlier to do my exercise class with a group at CBS, and then I go to rehearsal. I'm home every day by 5:30, with the exception of our orchestra rehearsal and the night we tape. Have our weekends off, summers, and every fourth or fifth week we get a week off. Now, you can't ask.
That's
for...
better than most people do, you know, people that work
in, regular hours.
And I think when you really, you know, make up your mind that you're going to spend a lot of time with your children and you really want to, mm-hmm. it's very easy
well,
to do.
Well, the thing is, too, like with your show and ours, when we get there, we don't fool around drinking coffee and telling stories
oh,
for an hour. You know, like yeah. a lot of shows do, they, you know, kid around
well,
and everything,
do,
and then finally they get up and they'll start.
Boy, I do.
But we've got it all scheduled, and that's it. And, you know, and this number
like
is for an hour, and this yeah. sketch, we rehearse for a half hour, and that's it, and then you go home.
It's tiring just to hear you tell it. I don't know how you manage to be so, I don't mean boring, I mean tiring. Lucy, do you have any desire to not marry into show business, or have you thought about it?
Oh, no. It's, I'm engaged to a fellow who's used to be in show business and who is not acting now, but is producing and directing, and mm-hmm. I think it's great because you're doing something that you both understand, you know? It's, I always used to think that if you were both in show business, it might conflict, but it doesn't. You you find that you have sympathy for the same types of things, you know? It's good. I think it really is.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we come back? Why don't we come back? We have
Why
to.
Don't we?
Where are we going?
Well, that's true. I never thought of that. When you say we're going away and we're coming back, you sit right here. You never move, do you?
No.
Not unless
They're
I go to the ladies'
away.
Room.
When we come back, you can all ask me anything you want to.
Oh,
no, I take
you
it back.
Fool
I take it back.
You.
No, you can't.
Oh.
No, I just said that. It was a silly moment.
Oh, wow.
Well, maybe you can. We'll be back after this message.
Oh.
I shouldn't have said that. We're back. And I offered the ladies a chance to ask me anything they wanted, but none of them could think of anything. Can you?
All right. What are your measurements?
Why, I assumed they were ladies. What
no,
a thing to say to a
You know, that's what
person.
People usually ask.
Yeah, they always, if you ask them anything, they ask you that, huh?
Yeah.
I think I have the normal chest expansion for a person of my size and age.
I have the same thing.
Give it. I was going to say give or take a few inches, but no, I won't. No, I'm relatively symmetrical, and in no startling way would I deviate from the norm.
You do.
Lucy wants to know if you can cook. That Lucy.
Yeah, your daughter wants to know if I can cook.
Well, I think you sort of, you know, gave me a look like you didn't like to cook before. Do
well,
you?
As a matter of fact, the tiny experience that I've had with cooking I've enjoyed. I made a stew once that would knock your hat off.
Yeah?
Yes, a very fine one.
Oh, because, see, I really think that's great when guys can cook. I don't know
yeah.
why that turns me on about people, but I think it's fantastic.
When men cook, that gets
to you. I saw
you
make an omelet on the show once. You're pretty good about that.
Yes, and I made a chef out in Nebraska so mad that he won't speak to me again. He said, that was
the worst omelet
you've
ever seen,
on.
Right?
And he said he would have thrown that man out of his kitchen if he'd
oh,
made an
no.
omelet that way. I'm sure Graham cares. But men cooking, that's not considered feminine?
No.
No.
They're the best.
Are you kidding?
There's no reason why it should. You never
it's
heard
of
it.
It's one of the most prestigious jobs, especially
yeah.
in Europe, you know, to be a chef. That's, wow. That's
yeah, all
next
good
to being
chefs
king.
Are men.
Yeah.
It's only
well, no.
one of the many ways
most
in which
are.
Men are
yeah.
superior.
You could be
oh,
a good...
Oh, you're opening up something now. I take it.
Hey, why did that thing I said on the show once get people so upset, get women so upset?
What was that?
Lee Grant was here the other night, and she is one of several actresses, but also women, I don't make a distinction, who was upset about
oh,
this
yes,
fact that
you did.
Huh?
Oh, yes, you did.
No, did I?
No, go ahead. I missed my timing. Go.
Who were upset when I said one time that women who like the company of other women are not as interesting as the women who like the company of other men. In other words, the women at a party who are the most interesting ones are the ones who don't want to get stuck with the women talking about canning and fruit jar rings and... Or not just domestic things.
That's
either,
true.
But when you're at a party, do you want to get stuck talking to the ladies? Well, I'm loading it by saying stuck. Do you enjoy the company of the female personages as much as that of the male?
Depends on the person.
Depends on what kind of guys are there and what kind of girls, right. Yeah, but if they were equally matched and fairly decent, I would pick the guys, right?
Yeah.
I stay with my husband.
Ah, tricky.
You do?
Hmm? Yeah. He's more fun than anyone I know.
But if he weren't there, would you find yourself gravitating to where the women are sitting around talking?
Well, immediately when you said that, I gravitate to Carol whenever I'm in a room where she's at a party and we go to a lot of the same functions. Maybe you're bored with this.
No!
Every time I see Carol, I go boom across the room and I just kind of stick around, tail her around. So that's why I was giving it some thought. Yeah. I do. I just stick with my husband.
Do you think talk about women, it's in vogue today, you know, I always talk about women and what they want. And I ran across a quote of Sigmund Freud where he said that of the...
Oh, well, what does he know?
No, he said something interesting. He said that in the 60 years or something of research that he had done, the one thing that would plague him to his grave was, I do not know what women want. What do you suppose he meant by that? He seemed to know what men do, but women remain a mystery.
I never knew what he meant by a lot of things he said. Good old Sigmund.
I think Sig was mixed up a lot.
Were you acquainted with the gentleman?
No, he tried.
He did, eh? Chased you around the psychoanalytic couch, I see. Okay.
I don't know what they meant. None of us have answered your question, and I don't know why Lee Grant was upset. Is that what you said?
You know, I forgot to pursue it because she... then introduced the fact that I was mentioned in the book, The Sensuous Man, something, and I...
Really? I haven't read that.
Yeah, how about that? How about them apples?
How about that?
Oh, I'm not gonna touch that.
Don't look at me, Dick.
Now, why was there that murmur in the audience when I said you could ask me anything you want?
I think they all probably know, the way we are sort of aware, that you heretofore have never liked to have any questions asked you. You have said that. And those of us that watch you
religiously,
you excuse the expression, know that you don't like to have your privacy invaded.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Them, how you like them apples?
Well, I... If you were to invade it just a little bit in a ladylike way, where would you begin?
With your wife.
Oh, you would? Well, since she isn't here, we'll have to change the subject.
That's what I mean.
Yeah?
No, actually, you're right. You said we could ask you anything, and then I couldn't think of a thing
chicken.
I could ask you on television.
You're chicken, Dick.
On television? Am I? Wait a minute, I'm being picked on by two generations here. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah,
three generations.
She's in the
middle.
But Miss Ball, do you feel that by blurting out the lurid details of my private life...
It was your idea, Richard.
I wanted to ask you. What's your middle name?
That's a good one.
No, that's not.
That's not a good one.
I'll tell you a good one.
I'll tell you mine if you'll tell me yours.
Well, what if it turns out to be the same name? Then we'll be...
What is it?
I don't give me a...
Oh, come on.
No, I don't want to tell you. Marian. I said you could ask me anything.
Elizabeth.
Marion.
Francine.
Francis.
No.
Someone said no. No.
You're not going to tell us, right?
It starts with an A.
Aloysius.
No, it's Alva. A-L-V-A, as in Thomas Alva Edison.
What's the matter with that?
It's terrible. Oh.
We'll be back. It's the baiting game. We have a message from our local station. We'll be right back. It's terrible. Saturday. It's us again. It's me, Richard A. Cavett.
Right.
Thanks a lot, Carol.
Came out.
Doubly amusing to my father, whose first name it is. Yeah. Okay, what's your middle name?
Creighton.
Creighton. It is not.
Sounds like the name of a university.
Sounds like a butler. You may serve, Creighton.
Yes.
It was my mother's maiden name. It's Irish.
Yeah.
Oh.
Creighton.
Carol Creighton.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was going to change it to Diane Belmont. What was it?
Say, we have just not that much time left before you have to collect your International Radio and Television Society Award. I was going to ask something. If you could change one feature about yourselves, what would it be? We'll start here with the...
Can I pick three?
Well, start, and then if we feel we need... more, we'll... Is that a fair question to ask attractive ladies?
Wow. Well, I've got such an array of choices. I guess my mouth, I would make it smaller. I really would.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, then I make something else bigger. This is on late.
Send us your favorite interpretation of that and address it to me, Mike Douglas. Lucy, do you ever think of changing yourself?
Yeah, I wish I didn't have to dye my hair. I wish it was this way.
It isn't?
Come now.
Right, is that a drag for you to have to...
Sure. And red is a happy color for me, so I wouldn't, you know, I'm not just going to not do it. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it, but I don't enjoy doing it.
What would it really come out? More like mine?
It's not as dark as Lucy's, and it's darker than yours. It's mousy brown.
Mm-hmm.
It was the last time I looked. It's a long time.
Do you think of yourselves as ladies who have everything? Because a lot of people do. You not only succeed in a terribly difficult profession, but you've got a family, and you've got fame, and you've got health and all of that stuff. Do you both?
Well,
I was thinking of you two.
Pretty well covered it.
Is there anything left out? Everything.
Not for me, and I don't know about Carol.
No.
Once I had my children, I felt that I had everything.
Well, maybe lunch with Paul Newman.
I'm waiting for the same thing.
I'll speak to Joanne for both of you.
Oh, thanks.
Can you arrange that? Paul Newman, that old geezer?
Oh, he'll be happy to hear that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to tell him.
Yeah.
You know him?
Yes!
You're
I can
some
arrange
swell it. Friend, Lucy.
I can arrange. Well, I also am a friend of Joanne's.
She'd come along.
What is it about Newman, really?
His eyes.
Would it be terrible if I revealed to you that those eyes are contact lenses and...
Alva, if you open your mouth...
I'm not about to. Gee, I was always such a fan of yours, Carol. How about a little special you and I did together? Alva and Creighton, right again. That might be a
I'd
nice
like to
idea.
See that.
Yeah.
I really would.
You know, well, we're so out of time. What do we have there? Just a couple minutes? Oh, do you want your daughter to get married at a certain age, or do you care?
No, I don't care now. If you'd asked me a few years ago, I would have, you know, put an age on it. But now, and especially the way she thinks, that I know she thinks, and the way she acts and reacts, I've been watching her carefully for many years, and I don't worry about her. And whenever she thinks it's time to get married, that's when she'll get married. And I'm not worried.
How'd you decide when she should move away from home?
She decided that. I knew that she was ready after a certain point in our argument on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a big wrench, and for any mother, I'm sure. And especially in that town, well, like any town.
Yeah.
But it didn't take her long to prove to me that she knew what she was doing.
And when
be
she did,
serious,
she...
Be serious, may I?
Sure.
I would love, and I really mean this, Lucy, for my three girls to grow up like this one, and I
thank
really
you.
Sincerely mean it.
Thank you.
I don't know how to take that. I can't take compliments. I get all green.
It's a terrific sensory response.
No, they're real marvelous kids, and it comes from the lady. And
that's true.
You know how.
And your boys, is there anyone sitting around here that you would want them to grow up like? So few people here, you know. Well, we'll think about that.
I think my son could take a few lessons from you.
I'll say.
Anyone could. We have a message. We'll be right back. Tomorrow night, Donald Sutherland, Siobhan McKenna, William Rusher, publisher of the National Review, and David Merrick. And this has really been nice.
Yeah,
to
I love thank you, Dick.
See the three of you like this and to find out what my middle name is. I'd forgotten.
You forgot.
And it was quite a treat for me. Lucy, congratulations on your award. It's the International Radio and Television Society Golden Award, I believe. And it is.
Thank you.
It's one of the ones that means something, and certainly couldn't happen to a nicer person. Thank you. Thank you, Carol. And thank you. I think I thanked everyone.
Good night.